is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The most important election in this calendar year is in Nigeria. In several weeks' time, the 25th of February, we have this news from the markets. Nigeria's bonds tumble after Moody's rating downgrade. I go immediately to Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Nigeria is in train to be the third most populous country on earth. It is rich in natural resources. It is vast. It is extremely energetic. It has a young population that's eager to participate in prosperity and a presidential election. Gregory, a very good evening to you. A very detailed piece in the Financial Times brings this news that former President Obasanjo, 85 years old, has voiced support for Peter Obi, who is running along with two of his rivals, a man named Atiku and a man named Tinubu, former leaders in both the regions and the country vice presidency. And Obasanjo is endorsing Peter Obi because he's a man of the future. He knows he's in touch with the people in the big cities because he has fresh ideas, because he's the youngest. Why exactly is this news fresh? Because it seems to have roiled the waters in Nigeria. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, in fact, General Obasanjo's endorsement of Peter Obi came several weeks ago. It came and went with few ripples left on the water. Former President Obasanjo is passionate about staying in the limelight. It's all about him. And he did not endorse his former vice president and running mate for two terms in office, who was Atiku Abubakar, because basically he was not about to elevate his former vice president over himself as in terms of prestige and status. So he gave away the endorsement to Peter Obi. Now, Peter Obi's a bright, smart young fellow, but he's unable to win this election simply because he doesn't have a national organization and is largely unknown in the North. He's got a strong youth appeal. He's got a lot of good ideas. He has very little experience. So by Obasanjo giving his endorsement to Peter Obi, it was a way of keeping Obasanjo in the limelight and not necessarily doing anything profound. Obasanjo has, and I was heavily involved with him and his administration over the years. I was the one who, when he was let out of jail after the dictatorship of Sani Abacha, he came to the United States for medical treatment, and I spent a couple of weeks talking him into going back and running for elective office, which he did. But he forgets all of the people who have helped him, not just me, but everyone else, and he, including Atiku Abubakar. And look, he was persuaded to support Atiku's candidacy for the vice presidency and did a lot all the way up to this point. Now he's, I think, snubbed by the fact that Atiku is going to win the election. And so Obasanjo is saying, well, I'm not going to be beholden to him. And so he gives his support to Obi. Obasanjo has been playing around the edges since he retired as president. He's been doing a lot of conciliation on behalf of the African Union. He was a negotiator between Tigray and the Tigrayan Popular Liberation Front and the Ethiopian government. So he's been doing things, but even when he was president, he was asking, what can I do to stay prominent? Can I become Secretary General of the United Nations and so on? So he's looking for a voice. And so this came up, his endorsement of Obi was a few weeks ago. It's disappeared. And there's much more going on with the election now that it's in the last 4 weeks of the campaign. And this is the most dangerous time of the campaign. Obasanjo was clearly right in not giving support to the All Progressives Congress candidate, Bola Tinubu, because Tinubu's campaign is now imploding literally on the scale of Hillary Clinton's implosion in the run-up to the election in which he was defeated by Donald Trump. Now everybody's lashing out. Tinubu is making dramatic allegations against Atiku, for example. He's claiming that the elections are going to be rigged. And here's the interesting thing. He comes from the ruling party, the APC, which is the party of the outgoing president, General Buhari. And so if anybody's going to rig the election, it's going to be the APC, as they clearly did on the last two occasions. So Tinubu is panicking. He's lashing out. This is going to make it an interesting few weeks. And so what we see as Tinubu implodes is that his former supporters are going to go one way or another. They're either going to go to Atiku, or they'll go to Obi, or they'll go to the northern or the Kano candidate from the northwest, Rabiu Kwankwaso. And so it's going to be up to Atiku to literally persuade people that a vote for Kwankwaso or Peter Obi is a vote for nothing, and that Tinubu voters or supporters should either stay at home or turn their vote to somebody who's actually got a program for the country going forward. And I think what will happen is, and as Tinubu has already telegraphed, is because he said that the election process had been corrupted. So he is setting himself up to have a legal challenge to the outcome of the election. We're seeing this in almost every country in the world now. If you don't win, you say it wasn't a fair election. And that's certainly what Tinubu is about to say.
In the interview with Financial Times, Obasanjo was extremely harsh about the current president, Buhari. He identifies managing the economy fail for 8 years, saying that kidnapping also blighted the country. Are these accurate assessments, Gregory?
Absolutely. No, he's quite right on that score. Absolutely right. Buhari has been an unmitigated disaster, as we knew he would, when he had been military head of state when he came to power on December 31st, 1983. He immediately imposed a regime on the country which was untenable, and the military, which had supported his takeover against the corrupt government, which elected government which had preceded him, also was horrified at Buhari, who exhibited the extreme qualities of vindictiveness and indecision. But he had a running mate at the time who was very, very vicious. And so you had a really bad situation then. And so the military, within 18 months, removed him and put in General Ibrahim Babangida. And that was basically also led to the first tenure of Obasanjo himself as a military president of Nigeria. Obasanjo and Babangida and the like absolutely saw just how inefficient, cruel, and misguided Buhari was then. And it took Buhari, 30 years or more before he was able to come back into elected office, and yet he didn't change at all from his original stripes. He continues to be vindictive, ineffective, indecisive, and the like, and he has plunged the country into corruption, the like of which has never been seen before.
Gregory, I've been conversing with a correspondent in Moscow, and I learned that Sergei Lavrov was recently in South Africa, Pretoria, to meet with President Ramaphosa and talk about reviving the relationship that once existed between South Africa and the Soviet Union. This, of course, is logical. BRICS means Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. However, I ask about Nigeria. Is Russia reaching out to these presidential candidates, or is Russia starting a new charm towards Nigeria? Nigeria, I do not believe, is weighed in on the sanctions regime in Europe, nor has South Africa. They've stayed out of the fight. So what do we know about Moscow and Nigeria?
Well, in fact, even during the Soviet days, the Soviet relations with Nigeria were very, very arm's length and cautious. There were relations, but it was never part of the Soviet sphere of influence by any stretch of the imagination. Neither was South Africa, actually. There were elements within South Africa, like the South African Communist Party, which was profoundly engaged with the Soviet Union, and they now form part of the African National Congress, the South African Communist Party does. But what we've got now is a Russian government which is profoundly anti-communist and anti-Soviet. So the reality is that those old days aren't coming back. Russia is very, very interested in Africa. As you know, it was influential in changing the situation in Mali when the government there was not happy with French support and the support of the ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States, in defeating the jihadist terrorist and rebel groups there. So they basically kicked the French out, kicked ECOWAS out, and brought in the Russian support, and particularly, of course, the mercenary groups to help contain the jihadists. Now, that did not endear Moscow to Nigeria, because Nigeria is the centerpiece of ECOWAS, which is the Economic Community of West African States. So no, the answer is no, the Russians have not been reaching out in any meaningful manner to any of the four major candidates for the Nigerian presidency. They may do so afterwards, especially given the reality that the mining and minerals regime in Nigeria is likely to be opened up with the new government, particularly if Atiku takes over as president, because in reality, Nigeria has far more gold than Mali, which is the fourth biggest gold producer in Africa, and far more than even Ghana. So if the whole mining legislation is changed in Nigeria, as I think it will be, then you will see countries like Russia coming in, hoping to gain some dominance in the gold mining sector, because this is what Russia has been doing. It's been building the world's largest reserves of gold, which has profoundly supported the value of the ruble and a lot of Russia's stability going forward. But again, you're quite right that neither Nigeria nor South Africa nor any of the states in Africa or South America have actually supported the West in sanctions against Russia. They're not interested in joining that fight. They see it as entirely an artificial conflict generated between Washington and Moscow.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to the Horn of Africa. The Ethiopian civil war is paused or finished. However, Russia's interested in Eritrea, which, according to U.S. reports, Eritrea still has troops on Ethiopian soil. There's also news about Sudan changing its mind about the Grand Renaissance Dam. I'm John Matthews.